But we actually have to, by the 30th, try and work in ourselves to understand that everything else has no power over us. Yeah.
So this can't be said. Why is there no concept of zero in Judaism?
No concept of zero in any ancient culture besides the so that Arabs invented it as a convenience. It's a difficult zero is a difficult concept. Why? Because actually you can't have absolute zero. It doesn't work that way. There is no absolute zero in the world. There's nothing, but what does zero mean? It's a theoretical number, doesn't it? It's interpolated into the system. It causes lots and lots of problems, the existence of zero. In halacha, for example, the 8 days of a bris, right? When does the bris happen? When a kid is born on Thursday, when's the bris?
Next Thursday.
Next Thursday. But that's not how an American would consider 8 days. He'd consider 8 days to be Friday, right? Because we're inherently taught to put zero into our calculations. That's why from Thursday to Thursday we consider a week later. You know, it's not. It's really 8 days later. And from 8 days we think about Thursday till Friday. So, you get that? Trust me on that one. The 7 days are over on Wednesday. The week is actually over on Wednesday. But we say a week later in English. What? Yes, that's where it comes from. The first Thursday is considered the zero. That's why how old are you?
20.
Right, but that's wrong. How old are you actually?
21.
Right. And I love you turn 20 when you are?
19.
Right, because the first year, the first 12 months of life, you are zero?
Not 21, yes. He's 20 and in the 21st year.
That's right. But in terms of halacha, he would be considered to be 21 years old.
So how come our Bar Mitzvah is on our 13th birthday, instead of...
So that's because our Bar Mitzvah, they say a kid is Bar Mitzvah when he's 13 and 1 day. 13 and 1 day means, not 1 day after 13.
13 full years plus 1 day.
Exactly.
So that's the American way of counting.
Right. That's specific to those cases. I think zero is just a convenience to make calculations. By the way, it messes up all the conversions of Hebrew dates also, which go back to before the Common Era, because there was no year zero. There wasn't the year zero. It went from one to one.
Well, then you go from one to two.
What? Went from 1 BCE to 1 CE. So actually, the Beit HaMikdash was not destroyed in 70 CE, but in 68 CE.
Because 2 years off.
You lose, what? 2 years off. You lose 2 years that way. Right. Because the one, you lose, there is no zero. And the one is actually what should be called two in our calculation. I never actually figured out exactly how that works, but that's what I've heard. And I assume it's correct, because again, you know, there was no year, if you look at the calendars, there's no year zero. It goes from minus one to plus one. Well, everything is messed up in conversion.
So minus one was the same year as plus one.
Excuse me?
Minus one was the same year as
no.
plus one?
No. Oh, okay. There was no zero in the middle, which is right. 2 years. There's no zero on either side.
We rode with that old scooter and my new scooter. The Needham took the old scooter and I took the new scooter. It's on a walk.
Thank you for that information.
The Needham!
So again, you lose 2 years that way, because the year from minus one to zero, and the year from zero to plus one, those years are gone.
No, it becomes 1 year.
No, it's no year.
Negative, it's the year negative one.
It's 2 years.
1 year later is the year one, because you skip zero.
If you do, the way we count years nowadays, which when you're born, right? When you're born, this is when your birthday is? So when you become one year, this is 1 year old, right?
Right.
Same thing here. Let's go back in time.
Right.
Which we're doing with a common era, right? So what would be year one?
One.
Right here, right. So we're missing 2 years.
1 year.
1 year here, 1 year there.
But you're counting the years.
No, because you're counting 1 year, though.
You went back to one. And then you didn't go down to zero like you were supposed to.
Right. Right. You go straight to one, which
when
is 1 year.
When you count down for the spaceship instead of taking off, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0 blast off, right? Isn't that the way they do it?
No. Well, it's not 2 years, though. It's 1 year.
It's 2 years off.
No, because
you lose 1 year for a year.
If it's negative one.
2, 1.
one. Then you waited 1 year, not two.
No. Because you lose on both sides.
Right. You lose on both sides, and negative
what
one is
numbers,
one.
Numbers, though? Right, let's go from our negative 5 to plus 5. You only lose 1 year.
You lose 2 years.
But you only lose 2 years if you say that the year negative one and the year one were actually one.
After this one, what should have come now?
A one.
Two.
Now
negative one.
Zero. There should have been a year there. Both
right.
After
so
instead
we call what should be zero.
No, we don't. There should have been a year going down to zero, and there should have been a year going up before we start counting one.
Right. So we skip
one. But next year we can't count one.
Right. We count one where zero should be.
No. Okay, let's not get bogged down in this. The two-part intangent. It is 2 years off. I'm willing to try and figure it out later on, but it's 2 years. He has to make any back to where we were here. Ethesulato means that we're supposed to actively negate anything besides Hashem, and not supposed to relate to anything else as having any control, any ultimate significance. We're supposed to connect directly to our Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's a very important point, because every nation in the world does not have that right. Every nation in the world connects to an intermediary, according to Chazal. Every nation has a side, somebody who's in charge of them in heaven, like Yaakov fought with the person in charge of Esav, right? And it says that when Yahushua went into the land of Israel, Hashem showed him a vision that he put his foot on the neck, on the necks of the Sarim, the Malachim were in charge, the angels in charge of the kings of Canaan. Only the Jews have a direct relationship. Moreover, besides the fact they have a direct relationship, they have to actually believe that since they have that direct relationship, they have not position, that's true, they have a special position in the world, but they should have a special attitude towards the world. What do I mean by that? So really, every single one of us should have the attitude of Rabbi Chanina Bedoysa. Rabbi Chanina Bedoysa is famous in the Gemara for a couple of stories. Well, actually, more than a couple, but I'll tell you two. One story, you probably know this story. One story is in Brachos. In Brachos it says that there was a serpent which killed everybody, a snake which killed everybody who walked down a certain road. And they were very upset because everybody got bitten and died. So along came Rabbi Chanina Bedoysa. The Chimedoysa came, and he said, listen, I'll show you. It's not the snake which kills, it's sin which kills. And Chimedoysa went, intentionally got bitten, and the snake died. And the Gemara says there, Ba'oso Shah Amru, that's when they said, woe to a person who meets up with a snake, and woe to a snake who meets up with Rabbi Chanina ben Doisa. Now, Rabbi Chimedoysa's attitude was such that he was confident in his relationship with Hashem, that he was able to say, I will not be killed, even though physically, naturally, quote-unquote, biologically, there should be poison injected in his veins and he should die. The same thing with Rechim Bedoysa, the story still goes in the Sefer Shabbos, that one afternoon, Friday afternoon, his wife lit, instead of olive oil, vinegar in the Shabbos candles. And she was very upset because the weren't going to have any light on Shabbos. So Rechim Bedoysa said to his wife, don't worry. He who told the oil to burn will tell the vinegar to burn. And the vinegar burnt as if it was oil, and they had light for Shabbos. So again, this goes against the physical properties of what we assume vinegar is. Vinegar is not combustible. But here clearly, for Rabbi Chanina and Medoysa, there's a different level, a different plane of existence. The way Rabbi Dessler explains it, you know, in Kabbalah there are four worlds. Atzilus, the world right next to Hashem, which is just constant. Bria, the world of the neshamos, of the souls, and of the angels, the malachim. There's Yetzira, which is one of the lower two lower worlds, which literally means shaping, and there's Atzia, which literally means to make or to manufacture. He says most people function, 99.999% of population functions at the level of Olam Atzia. What's the level of Olam Atzia? What did you know about Yetzira? The difference is, the names are not important for this, just the concept. the difference is that Sami Panchal Matia sees natural law as the immovable absolute rule, whereas his spiritual needs or spiritual aspirations have to flex and bend in front of natural law. A person lives at the level of Olam HaYetzira, it's the other way around. His spiritual needs and aspirations are absolute. And therefore, nature has to bend, within reason, obviously, you can't break it, but within reason, nature has to bend in order to accommodate his needs. And that's a Rechina ben Doisa. He bent nature because the absolute was the spiritual realm, not the physical realm. But that's what puts it also a little bit differently as well. He said, somebody who lives in the Olam HaSiyah, he lives outside himself. Everything is dictated by what's going on around him. And that's what dictates his perception of reality. The person who lives on the level of Olam HaSiyah, he's inner directed. Meaning his world, his primary world, is the world inside of him, which has to do with his spiritual level and spiritual perspective and spiritual aspirations. And everything is colored by that which goes on within him, as opposed to that which is outside coloring that which is in. He says that's why the others, the forefathers, were able to make kisa saderach. They're able to walk very quickly from place to place. Why is that? Because for them, distances were relative. For us, distances are fixed, they're absolute. For them, distances were relative. Yoshua was able to make the sun stand still. How does the sun stand still? You know, it's a physical impossibility, right? No, in terms of a person who lives on the level of Olam HaYetzira, you know, God will take care of it. Whether the sun actually stands still, whether it was an illusion, it doesn't matter. The point is that the way Hashem is almost bound to respond to someone who lives on a level according to his perception. I would say Hashem is bound. That's why the Chazal say, Tzadik goes there, v'akodesh boruch mekayim. A Tzadik decrees, and Hashem has to fulfill. That's the way it's got to be. The thing is, who's the person who can be the Tzadik who goes there? A Tzadik who decrees and Hashem fulfills? Only the guy who lives on the level of Emes Malkeinu Efes Ulozo. That's a very high level in which to live. It's not so simple. Most people are not capable of functioning at that level. Most. Speak for myself. But the odds are most of the people in the room here today are not capable. I don't want to say bad to anybody, right? It's just before Rosh Hashanah. But the odds are that most of the people in the room are not capable of functioning at that level where they disregard any outer control, any other form of governance over themselves other than Hashem. There's the Nefesh HaChaim, the Chaim V'Lozner. So it's a great length about the power of Eino Mevado, of thinking there's nothing else besides Hashem. And he says somewhere, he says, in Nefer Shechaim, the Chaim V'Loshen, the students of Zon Lagon, he says that if a person wants to be saved from a dangerous situation, he should think in his mind, he should focus on Eino Mevado. Now this is not his idea. The Kosher Gemara Chulin, Zion says that there was a certain witch, this is the day when they believed where the witches, sorcerers had powers. A certain witch who was trying to... A certain witch who was trying to overcome... I think it's Rabbi Chanina over there. Not Rabbi Chanina, but it's just Rabbi Chanina. And he said, do what you want. Eino milvado tzi. It says, Eino milvado. Now this is the point of Gemara to know. Because the Gemara there says, Rama nikra shmam kshafim. Why is magic called kshafim? Kshafim peyud, man. Because they are makhichim pamal yoshamala. They contradict the heavenly host. Mala is on high. Pamalya is like the chevra, the bunch on high, which means the angels and all those guys up there. Now, what this Gemara is saying is that witches, sorcerers, whatever they are, they actually have power to overcome all sorts of things which are decreed upon you in heaven. This is an amazing concept because what it means is that even though God decreed, decreed upon this guy a life of 70 years and health and wealth, these witches, the people who have trust in, according to this Gemara, can come and undermine that life. Have a guy killed off early, you know, have him lose all his money, despite the fact that it goes against, so to speak, the will of Hashem. It's an amazing gemara. Takes a lot of time to explain, and of course the Rambam held it's not true. But another reason not to like the Rambam, right? Without the gemara in depth, the gemara that says yes, but was one way to get around that the Kshatim won't have power over you. That's if you tap into a higher source. Even to believe that I'm under the jurisdiction of angels is not Eino Milvado. A person can tap into Eino Milvado, then he goes way up. He's not under the control of Kshatim, he's not under the control of the Malachim, he's not under the control of everything, of anything. So Chaim Elozhin writes in his paper, he says that this is not just for sorcery and witchcraft, but any time you need to be safe, stay focused on Eino Milvado. So there's a famous story, I don't know if it's true or not, but they tell the story. The story tells about his great-grandson. Great-great-grandson. From Chaim Elozhin. His great-great-grandson was the Velvel Soloveitchik, the Brisker Rav, who during the Second World War had to flee from Poland to Israel. And he got out. And it says, according to the story relates, that he was on a train which was being searched by the Nazis and he didn't have proper papers. So what did he do? So he focused in his mind on Eino Milvado. That was, he concentrated on Eino Milvado, there's nothing other than Hashem. Consistently and constantly. And while he was focusing on that, the Nazis just walked off. It says, again, according to the way I heard the story, one moment his concentration wavered and they started coming towards him. And then his concentration was focused again, and they walked in the other direction.
I heard it was his son with him, and he was telling his son, or some lad that was with him, also concentrate.
Mm-hmm.
And then the kid started, they started coming towards him, and he didn't know what was wrong, and he looked at his kid, and he was off looking somewhere else. And he said, I told you to concentrate, and then they left.
Yeah, that's right, you're right, that's the way it was.
You're wrong.
But, in any event, so, whether the story is true or not, the idea is this idea that a person only lives on the governance of other forces if a person gives credence to those other forces. Yeah.
So what if someone only believes in Hashem and, say, gravity? Then would natural forces. Hashem and natural forces. Then would Malachim and... Which is... Oh, they would still have...
Sure. Power. Well, yeah, because if you don't believe that Hashem... If you need to, Hashem will allow you to jump 20 feet in the air, if necessary. Then, yeah, you now don't really believe in Eino Milvado. Right?
Yeah, I know, but even though you don't believe in these particular things, you're still not protected from them.
Right. Because you're lacking in your total emunah. By the way, Rebbe says, not by the way, very important, you don't have to believe that if Hashem wanted to you to do it now, and you really believe that you could turn yourself into a frog. That's not part and parcel of the belief. The belief, as says in Southern, is that powers or properties, which in nature occur only in certain instances, concerning certain substances, can be transferred to other substances. For example, the property of combustion, or combustibility, which only oil is supposed to possess, so through the power of Eino Milvado, power of Olam HaYetzirah, it can be transferred to vinegar. There's a story like that with Elisha. One of Elisha, the prophet's students, dropped an axe into the, this is what Rav Tov says to me about, he dropped an axe into a river or a lake, whatever it was, and it sunk. So Elisha threw in a piece of wood, and the piece of wood sunk, and the axe came to the surface. So it says to the prophet, what is he doing? He's transferring the property of buoyancy from the power to float, from the piece of wood to the axe. So there is, it's not everything and anything, but there are, you know, within limits, within reason, that Hashem is going, it's not, and that's not even a miracle. But there's a concept of...
That's reasonable, though.
What?
That's reasonable, though.
Yeah, for an Olam HaYetzirah person. It's what it says, what am I supposed to tell you? I'm not making this up. So the idea is that there's, obviously, there's not some, a person, for example, can walk instantaneously from Eretz Yisrael where Yaakov left off to Haran where he was going and back, but very, very quickly. So again, things are relative. They don't absolutely drop to nothingness, but they're relative, and they bend, and they can flex. Yeah.
Quick question. First of all, where in the word mathematician you see the I do see the word
pshat? You take...
No.
No.
So it's the cup over here. That's his cup, and the shin, and the pen.
Hey. What?
So you can take off the word the yud men. It's not really important.
Can you just example like
ketchup is the root?
Do what I mean, like let's say can you make a volcano erupt under and fall into it and die?
I got it. Probably not. But it's an interesting idea. Yes.
I heard that there's some people that believe that if a person believes in anything, it's going to happen. The thought is because that a person believes in Teva, that's the nature of a person, so it's not possible for a person to really believe, to be convinced and believe in anything. If a person will believe that the handle of the watch is going to go the opposite direction, it's going to go the opposite direction. If you believe.
That's not
Peter Pan.
Well, like things like that don't happen for tricks. It's just in order to make tricks. There has to be some real avodas Hashem reason for it. Otherwise, it's not going to work. It's that.
I'm saying because it's a sumo, there's also a person that believes in.
I can't tell you. So sumo.
And every time you say that where the fairies don't exist, one died, and you have to cross it.
Personally, I don't believe that there are anybody, whatever cult of Duma once existed, I don't believe that any of them are, around today. That's my personal belief. But in that Gemara Chulin, on that Zion, on Amud Aleph, the Gemara there tells the story of Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yair. Pinchas Ben Yair is Shem Bar Yochai's son-in-law. So Pinchas Ben Yair was once going on the road to go redeem taxes. And he came to a river, River Ginoy. And he said to the river, okay, split. I gotta cross. So the river said, why should I split? I'm doing the rutzah of my creator, and you're doing the rutzah of your creator. The will of your creator is that you should go to redeem taxes, yes, but the will of the creator is that I should flow. So why should my fulfillment of the will of God be overridden by your fulfillment of the will of God? So Rabbi Pinchas says, if you don't split now, I'm going to decree that you should dry up. and then the river split. This is a fascinating remark. The river split, and I think the Yom was going to go through, but there was somebody else who was with him was going on the way to do some other mitzvah. He said, stay open for him too. And there was a non-Jew there who was there together with the group, and he said, stay open for him too, that he shouldn't say that I left somebody in my one of my companions behind. So the river held itself open for all three of them. Now, it's interesting, the Gemara again, because we talked about it for a long time. But the Gemara, the very interesting part at the beginning of the Gemara is that the river is saying is not untrue. The river is doing the will of God. And it's not so simple. Nature is the will of God. It's not so simple to overturn nature. Nature is Hashem's agent in running the world. That's why Chazal say, Teva, the nature, is in Gematria the same as Elohim. They're both 86. Why? Because Hashem chose to run the world through nature, the laws of nature. So the only way you can get over and above the laws of nature is by actually living on that level which transcends the laws of nature. That was their Pinchas Ben Yair. Pinchas Ben Yair didn't say, you're wrong. He said, you're right. You're doing the will of God, but the human fulfillment of the will of God is a higher value. Why? Because human beings have free will. So therefore... Excuse me?
And he was telling us for proving it, since the fact is that I'm going to draw you up.
Right. Right. So therefore, what the Pinchas Ben Yair was telling the river, was that you have to do the will of God. Now, you have to... I'm sorry, let me phrase it this way. You have to serve a human will of... human fulfillment of the will of God as opposed to fulfilling the will of God on your own. But that's only if somebody is able to overcome nature. Again, because perspective is that higher perspective.
Who fulfills the will of God more? Nature or people?
Probably nature.
Nature.
Unfortunately.
It doesn't have a choice. It has to.
Yeah.
It's not fair.
It doesn't have free will. Okay. So all that is supposed to go into this, and into this concept of Ezeh Gulaso. And then we end with the Pasuk, Kakosu B'Soroso, like it says in the Torah, of Hashem, V'yadata Hayoyim, you should know. There's two separate things. You should know today, Vashevoto Elu Avecha. And we put it in, how does the article translate?
Take it to
your heart, whatever. So that's not that translation. So what does it mean? The Prophet is telling us we know lots of things intellectually. Every one of us can state intellectually that there's a God and that God has a will and that we should be doing the will of God. But our hearts don't follow our heads. Right? And since our hearts don't follow heads, so Moshe Rabbeinu has to tell the truth, it's not enough for your Tato Hayom. You know it already. You know it today, but that's true. You know it today, but your whole life, not just Hayom, the whole life you have to spend being Meshiva Halei to try and get that heart to cooperate with the head. That is a very, very difficult thing to do. Most of us, again, I don't want to impugn anybody here before Rosh Hashanah, but most of us here are capable of stating facts and stating beliefs and not necessarily living by them, myself included. Yes? Is it a sweet spot Right, it's a very hard thing to do. It's not a simple thing to do. But Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't expect an Yisrael to necessarily accomplish overnight, but that's really what a person has to spend their life doing. And the Gemara at the end of the Sechta Soita, very difficult Gemara, the Gemara says the whole purpose of Golos, and the reason why Golos is so long, is to prove to the Jews that there's nothing upon which they can rely, nothing has any real strength, except for Hashem. And that all other powers, all other authorities, all other allies are meaningless. Ultimately, the way the Gemara puts it is, Ein Lanu Rishoyin Ela Al Avinu Shebashamayim. We can only rely on Hashem, on our Father in Heaven. So in essence, the whole idea of Golos is to teach the person, Hashem Elohim Bashamayim Mal, Ba'aretz V'tachas Einod. Again, that God is the Lord in the heavens above, and on the earth below, Ein Oth, there is none other. As we mentioned, I don't know if we mentioned this, maybe we did. But what does it mean, Hashem Hu Elohim? The word Elohim has many meanings. Elohim is used for also human authorities. Judges, it's used to describe, powerful people. And it's used even to describe angels. But what it's saying is that ultimately, this word Elohim, which means master of forces, the ultimate master of forces is Hashem. And that it's hard to fully realize that, but that's what I'm saying. Ultimately, there is no other besides Hashem, Hashem Elohim. And Ramchal says about this, he says, there's nothing we can grasp about Hashem. We can't grasp, I saw today a high school class in this very non-Orthodox high school, so I told them today that God doesn't exist in time. God created time, and they couldn't handle that. they just couldn't handle that. It backfired because life was too way over their head. So the
what grade? No, 12.
12th grade, modern Orthodox. I was thinking like more fruit marriages than my.
Nah, they think much less. Don't believe the stereotype.
Repeat the concept one more time.
Yeah, but they don't like physics and stuff. I can't say.
God doesn't exist within time. That was a tag. We talked about what happened before the world was created.
All time
will be. What? There's no words we can use to describe it.
It will be, will
be. Right, that's what he was.
Everything.
So the word, name Havaya is supposed to grasp it to a certain extent, but there's no real way to grasp it. It just means he exists. You can't use the word time in any way, shape, or form. So they couldn't handle that. You know, they said, you know, something has to exist in time. It has to be bound by time.
Yeah,
there's
we
no
do.
Way. What?
We do.
Yeah. So there's it was a tactical error to mention that. But since you said somebody what happened before the world was created, and I said it was such a mistake on my part, I regret it now. I said, you know that the word before is not really relevant in this conversation because Hashem created time as part of creating the world. And that's
answers. Okay, modern cosmology said the same thing. They don't like that either.
Yeah, they're not up in modern cosmology. What can I tell you? Okay, so in any event, so the Ramchal says, we can't understand anything about Hashem. That's part of, just like we can't understand that Hashem is just beyond time. We can't understand Hashem's wisdom. We can't understand Hashem's patience. We can't understand Hashem's kindness. All these things are beyond our grasp. We don't have the words for them. Even though we can associate the word kind with Hashem, but it doesn't fully grasp it. It's a drop in the bucket. It's just like a metaphor to describe what Hashem does, and so on and so forth. So he says we can't grasp anything about Hashem in the positive sense, what Hashem is. But we can grasp, he says, that nothing else has power besides Hashem. That's the one thing we can grasp about Hashem, that that there's nothing besides Hashem. Everything else is created by Hashem, therefore subordinate to Hashem, and therefore ultimately powerless, except for the power that Hashem delegates to it. Yes?
Does Hashem speak?
No. But you can hear Hashem.
Uh-huh.
And the term patience is problematic because patience seems to involve time.
What? True.
Thank God is patient is sort of a oxymoron, I guess.
Right. Well, by that and Hashem, the word, we use the same word for people speaking. But really, what it means with Hashem is Hashem expressed, there was an expression, a davar, which is a thing, what's the word? What? Thing came into being.
Manifestation.
Manifested itself, perhaps is the word for it. So it doesn't actually mean that Hashem has vocal cords and speaks, right? There is no such thing by Hashem, clearly, right? So you can hear Hashem. Hashem imparts to you a davar, and Hashem can impart to everybody together a davar, the same davar. But that's not the same thing as speech. There is no vocal cords moving air.
Well, just like he communicates today with us with the davar present.
That's not all the same thing.
I don't know if it's the same.
Hashem speaks through the Torah. That's really the way it works. Hashem speaks to the Jewish people through the Torah.
Today, not
he doesn't speak to us today. There is, that's why Chazal say the gospel is still reverberating from Har Sinai. The Gemara says, the Torah says, Kol gadol v'lo yatak, a great sound which never ceased. What do you mean never ceased? Because it reverberates. Whatever relationship we have with Hashem today is the reverberation of that thing at Har Sinai. I'm not happy with that, the way you formulated it, that Hashem speaks to us through Hashgacha. It's very hard to understand Hashgacha. It's very dangerous to live one's life assuming that one has Hashgacha process.
Every person could see it. He sees it. He could say...
Personal control of Hashem over all aspects of a person's life. It's a very difficult... I'm not saying it's not true, but it is a big issue of dispute among Jewish thinkers. But... What? No, I should call it really attention. That's correct. Sorry, attention. Individual attention. It's kind of dangerous to live like
that. Rav Shach used to say all the time, he's about Bracha, that if you try to look at the Bracha, to see him... he said maybe more about Midah and Eged Midah. He said, for example, if a person steps on a chair and he leaves the dirty with a thing, with his foot there, and he walks away, and then someone sits down, his foot gets dirty, and the guy that stepped on the chair doesn't know what happened to the guy, but he was mad that he did that, he left the dirty chair in the place, right, in a public place. And there's two ways away after Shabbat to punish him. You can punish him a year later, a month later, with a car passing by and just pushing him water, and he's going to just get angry, and he's not going to know why it happened to him.
How is he supposed to know that?
He's not supposed to know that.
So what good does it do?
So he's saying, so what's the point of a Kadosh Baruch Hu punishing you in this world? When he's punishing you in such things, he's doing it because he did sin in this world and he wants you to fix it. If a person tries to look, the sin that you do, you're going to find it. If a person opens an eye and he looks for it, he's going to find it.
I heard that's only true of great tzaddikim.
Why do I need to be a tzaddik to think such a thing? But the example I gave, and he's going to say why it happened, he's going to say, oh yeah, I just did yesterday this and this, I just did today or that, and it's going to make sense to him. He could.
I don't think that works for
communication.
I don't think so. I don't think it works for most people. It might work for somebody like Rashad, but it won't work for you. I mean, no offense. You know, I keep having to catch myself here. But for me, it wouldn't work. Okay. In other words, there has to be a certain assumption that everything that happens in a person's life is a specific micromanagement of Hashem. It's not so simple. And according to Nefesh Chaim, it's definitely not so simple, because Nefesh Chaim has a whole self-perpetuating system without Hashem's direct intervention at all times. You have to invoke Hashem's direct intervention by appealing to Eino Milvado. It's not automatic, according to Nefesh Chaim. It doesn't occur at all times. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a hand up this one?
So you can see sometimes an actual punishment in direct response to something that you can identify that you did?
Can you? It's hypothetically possible. Should you expect to? Not necessarily. Because not
it does happen, to people on your Rav Shach level, I mean, it happens to,
It can't happen to anybody, right?
Well, if a guy rocker punish a person, why does a guy that goes in the street and his suit gets dirty riding on the way to a wedding and a car passes near him?
Because that guy was a washer. He drove over. What do you mean? He drove in a puddle.
What does it have to do with me? That's the first thing.
You were standing there.
So, why did God... But God did it.
God's supposed to change nature? God did that?
His problem.
No.
But, yeah.
God did that? Are you sure about that?
He just failed to prevent it.
Why? Yeah.
He didn't do it. He just failed to prevent it.
He didn't bring down an invisible force field at that moment to prevent the blood from hitting.
He was just saying that God hit me. He was just saying that him was supposed to hit me, right?
Is that true?
Yeah. No?
Why are you standing next to a puddle?
Not necessarily. The Tanya says that, but the Orach Chaim does.
Well, okay.
So they want to place us
together. The Tanya says what?
That if somebody hits me, I'm supposed to believe that it's really God hitting me. Well, Chaim HaKadosh says not that way.
Oh.
He says if somebody's going to hit me, it could be his free will. That he hit me.
It's obviously his free will. He's going to get a punishment for him.
No, not like that. No. The free will meaning I was did not deserve to get hit. He hit me because his free will overrode what I deserved at this moment.
That's against what we spoke today, because we just said that if a person believes in...
This is a special power you have to invoke. What, do you think this is so simple? It's not simple. Otherwise, you're right. We'd all be on the level of Yaakov Avinu. We'd all be having Kitzas Adera.
I know, but...
You
know,
I actually agree with you, because that's a logical sense. If you choose to believe Hashem, then you have to...
Someone will listen to the...
What?
If you go to kill someone now, if your free will, that someone dies, that person will listen to he died not because you chose for him to die. He died because you were destined to die.
By no, the Orach Chaim...
You were just executed.
So that's your theory, but the Orach Chaim happens to disagree with you.
Okay.
So we'll just go. I just want to demonstrate to you that that's not a
universal.
Did I say that?
But the Tanya agrees.
Right, the Tanya agrees.
Okay.
But the Orach Chaim doesn't.
No, neither does.
They're both cavalry.
Oh.
Now you're stuck.
Throwing Yaakov into the pit. Yeah. Save him from the
free will.
Yeah.
That's where the Orach Chaim is. Right.
Yeah. I don't like the Tanya.
The
I have a race
still in the close to Gola.
Hello,
sir. I'm not saying you have to accept the Orach Chaim, but you have to know he exists and he was holy. Because the first one, the Divrei Chaim, was asked, there was a town in which they fired their teacher, the Malamed, because he said in the class to the kids that the Orach Chaim did not have Ruach HaKodesh. So afterwards they felt a little bit guilty. And they wrote to Divrei Chaim, maybe he lost his panosa, maybe we shouldn't have done this thing. So Orach Chaim said, no, you absolutely did the right thing. Anybody who said the Orach Chaim HaKodesh didn't have a Ruach HaKodesh, it would not be Kodesh. You can't use children. So, reading the Orach Chaim HaKodesh Rav Ruach HaKodesh.
Got the picture of the story on the
back. Let me get from from your perspective.
No,
the,
they can't both have real HaKadosh and both they have to be things. No?
Sure. That's a beautiful thing about Judaism. We're very, very,
opinionated.
Not just opinionated.
Pluralistic.
What?
Pluralistic.
He says when they threw him, when Reuven had thrown to the pit.
Reuven?
I'm sorry, Judah. Judah had thrown to the pit. It says, Lakisha Adam Baal Bechira, because the man is, has free will. The Ratzon has free choice. The Ratzon has free will. Yachol La'arov, and he can kill Mishaloni Chayat Mipa, somebody who's not liable to death. Masha'en Ken Chayat Rose, close to wild animals, he tells. Says, Lo Yitzruba Adam, and Lo Yitzchayat Mipa L'Shamayim. Wild animals can't come to kill a person unless he's Chayat Mipa.
Like the Torah, it is a Gemara of Rosh with a snake with a seven heads. The snake with the seven heads.
But it's not a simple level to reach. So everyone, Nachum Yishtamtu, when you hear the story, oh, Nachum Yishtamtu went around saying Gamzul Utaiva, right? I can also go around saying Gamzul Utaiva, right? But it's meaningless, because by me, it doesn't really come from the depth of my heart. I don't even know if it's a B'yodach or Hayyoy, but really not about Shevos El Bavecha. This is living on a different astral plane. Everybody agrees, the Rambam, or even the Rambam, agrees that if a person lives on that plane of connection to Hashem, then there's a special relationship between Hashem and him, and special protection. Then he won't get splattered with mud if the Russia goes by and goes through the ditch, through the puddle.
I have a more
idea, the question whether it works. No, you have to run a study.
He told me that it works.
Every single time?
He told me it's
good. How many times did he try it? I'm just serious.
Me?
No, him.
Him?
Yeah.
He tried it for years.
Every single time, whenever a cab said it didn't come.
Whenever a cab didn't come, he figured out what he's supposed to fix, which I'm already did, and he needs to fix.
So in other words, every time, I'm not sure I'm getting this, every time a cab came late, or a bus came late, or a car came late, there was an elevator involved?
A bus doesn't have no time, but a taxi is supposed to come at a specific time and you're missing a meeting because of it or something like that.
Yeah. So sometimes, for a normal person, I'm saying not a tzaddik, right? For a normal person, sometimes it might be hashgacha, and sometimes it just might be that the cab driver is a jerk. If you live on the level of Nochem Ish Gamzu, there's no such thing. Even the cab driver is a jerk, then nevertheless, he would show up if he had to show up for you. I'm being a little bit adamant about this because it's very dangerous for a person on a simple madrega, on a lower madrega like us, to live on the assumption that things that happen to him are hashgacha pratis. You can't assume that. Lots of things can go wrong based if you live your life based on that assumption. Once you get a lever of the Chanina ben Gaisa, nothing is gone to, for that matter, even get to Madrega of Rav Shach, we can talk. But right now, I'll be very careful about saying something like that.
I know lots of people think that way, Mr. Shiva.
That what?
Well, the approach that's given to us by most other
Shiram
is Hashgacha Pratis. So I know people who stub their toe and then, you know, say, why did Hashem do that to me? I should do something.
No, so the Gemara says that those are Yisurim. The person on the sun, right. So yeah, in other words, the fact that you stubbed your toe might be because you're an idiot and you didn't look where you were going. Yeah. But it has to do with Yisurim for you. It's Mechaper and Tom Avela.
Well, right. Which Gemara?
What? In the ritual. It's just that an elephant, not the onion.
What?
Another
make
of the flavor of the mushroom? No, not that one. It says, Ahechon taflis taflis taflis. How far does the Yisurin go? The Yisurin goes to the point that even if you take a fist, put your hand in your pocket, take out 2 coins. What? Who's Machriz? Yeah, Hashem's Machriz.
Nothing happens in this world, including banging a finger, by getting a splash.
Who's Machriz?
Milamala, someone over this world in the sky up there.
Right.
Someone up there is Machriz.
Right.
Who's
Malachim?
Malachim. So they're Machriz.
So they're for what? So they're for what?
Oh, it's a physical
akhrazah. It's a spiritual akhrazah that he's going to stub his toe, but it's not necessarily, right now planned by
that
thing that's happened.
There. No, that's a meaning, doesn't mean akhrazah just
cool. No, it was anticipated. And I don't think decreed is the right word. It would be nigzar. Makhrizin is not the same thing as gzera. Makhrizin means it's known that this is going to happen to a person. Hashem knows it's going to happen. Malachim knows, though it's not, not everybody agrees, but most people agree, that Hashem knows it's going to happen. So Machrizin means we know that this is what's going to happen. It doesn't mean that this is actually decreed.
Hashem knows it's going to happen? What?
Not all of you showing
it. What?
If you read the book by a fellow Rabbi Dreich, say they have perfect faith. Oh, yeah? It's an Orthodox rabbi.
He's
right. Yeah. He has a book about the Yuchim Ikrim. I don't understand how any Rishon can hold not that way, but even if I'm showing hold that God doesn't necessarily know, not showing you and I hold the
I think that's kind of a contradiction of what Hashem is. You could say that Hashem doesn't know which of all known possibilities you will take, and therefore he knows all possibilities, so he does know, like, let's say you can take a million decisions for the next second. He knows every single one of those million paths, but he might not, since he gave you a free will, he might not know which path he did, but whatever path he did, he knows about it, because that was one of the ones. So you have, like, 4 tubes in front of you.
Right, that's what the Rabbi...
He knows each of those
basically
tubes.
Basically, that's what the Rabbi says. He has knows all the possibilities, and he can manipulate it that one of those possibilities will occur.
Right, but your free will can choose those possibilities.
Right, but you've been choosing.
And since Hashem knows all those possibilities, he knows everything that's going to happen, but he doesn't know exactly.
I don't like that position, because it seems from all the nevuahs we have, which predict things that's going to happen, it's not just Hashem, well, these are possibilities. He's saying, this is
I'm saying that would be the only way I could see someone saying that Hashem, quote unquote, doesn't know until be in the realm of Hashem's. Definitely
know who
Hashem is.
So Rabbi Kolch knows everything which happened till now. And he knows all the possibilities.
But he's outside of time, so he knows.
Okay, in economics, look, I don't like Rabbi either. He has his approach which I don't like, but that's what he says. He does say that. Okay, everybody, we'll stop here for today. Maybe somebody will finish the line. I thought we'd actually finish.